The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, over the last 10 years, the Director of Public Prosecutions chose not to prosecute nearly 67% of people accused of sexual offences. That's in files that were submitted by the Gardaí. In total, this is more than 13,000 people accused. The figures have been released to News Talk under the Freedom of Information Act. And our reporter, Jessica Woodlock, has been looking into the data and she joins me now. Jessica, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So what do the figures tell us?
So News Talk has received this data on the DPP's prosecution over a 10-year period. So between 2014 and 2024, we can reveal that the Gardaí gave 17,662 sexual offence files to the DPP. And those cases, Pat, involve nearly 20,000 suspects. And the DPP opted to prosecute just over one third of these, which is 6,253 people.
Now, can you tell us about these prosecutions?
Yes. So of the files that were prosecuted by the DPP, there is a relatively strong conviction rate. So while just over 30% of all sexual offence suspects were prosecuted, there was a high conviction rate of around 75% in either the district, circuit or central criminal court. And Pat, I spoke to a rape survivor about these figures and the conviction process because it's important to remember that behind many of these cases, there is a victim survivor. So I spoke to Kira Mangan. Her rapist, Shane Noonan from Castle Hill Park in Turlock Road in Castlebar in County Mayo, was convicted in 2023. And he was sentenced to 8 years in jail, a sentence which he later appealed unsuccessfully. And Kira gave me her reaction to the fact that her case was one of around a third of sexual offence cases that were actually prosecuted over a 10-year period.
I think we have a really important role, especially off the back of this kind of data about the very low decisions to go forward with prosecuting from the DPP. It's important that we really, you know, instill the narrative that just because the DPP decide not to go forward with prosecution, it doesn't mean that you weren't believed, but a lot of survivors may actually assume or place a lot of thought that, you know, if the DP, I mean, that's the first thing that I said when I got the call that, you know, they've decided to prosecute. And I said to my Garda liaison officer, oh my God, they believe me. But she said, they've always believed you. So I think that's really important, that narrative to really, you know, instill is that, you know, this is not, they don't believe you. It's just that there was unfortunately not enough evidence to go forward. I personally just count myself just kind of lucky that I somehow made it through to the end against all of the odds. And that's the thing. Survivors are actually speaking out not only anymore to just out their perpetrators when they do get justice. They're speaking out and they're waiving their anonymity to highlight the grueling process that it was to actually get here and how rare it is to actually get here. And survivors are kind of speaking out not only, I suppose, to out their perpetrator and transfer that shame, but it's also just to highlight how hard it was to get here and that things need to change. The thoughts of justice were what kept me going through that process and why I kept within it. But I did think numerous times about just, you know, dropping my case, especially when you hear in the news how long it took survivors to go there to get to the very end of this process. And you're not guaranteed that you'll get justice. On average, it seems to be taking at least 5 years to put one rapist away. So, I mean, that's a very long time. And you really kind of just have to put your life on hold, essentially, for that. And you will be getting, you know, all these delays and postponements and things like that. And that's why survivors are speaking out. They're trying to change the system for the next victims that have to go through this absolute grueling process. But justice is possible. And that's I hope that message comes across, that justice is possible. And we're hoping, you know, that the system will get easier for victims.
So that was Kira Mangan. And she said there that she considered dropping her case at one point.
That's right. And Kira and others have spoken about the traumatic experience of the justice system. And while she persisted with her case and got a successful conviction, These numbers today, Pat, really show us that there are thousands of people who don't get that same outcome.
Now, the cases that aren't being prosecuted, has that number risen or fallen over the years that you looked at?
So there is a clear trend that the DPP is prosecuting more sexual offence cases now than it was 10 years ago. So back in 2014, 80% of cases given to the DPP were not prosecuted. But this has dropped over the years to a low of 56% in 2022. And the most recent figures show in and around 60%. And I spoke to senior counsel Lorcan Staines about why the DPP is choosing to prosecute more cases in recent years. Now, Lorcan Staines has 20 years experience in the criminal justice system. He's worked in criminal prosecution and in defence, and he has acted on behalf of the DPP in some instances. However, he gave his personal view on the reasons for these changes.
So not so much in relation to old cases, but in relation to new cases. We now have information on phones. So we have our Snapchat very regularly comes up in cases involving young people. We have Tinder that very regularly comes up in cases involving young people. There's obviously iMessage and WhatsApp and so on. There's videos and there's photographs. CCTV is well advanced in comparison to where it was 10 years ago. So for all of those reasons, you might now have something independent, because oftentimes in a sexual case, it's he said, she said, or one person's word against another, and therefore objective independent evidence, which doesn't have skin in the game, so to speak, which can point either to the fact that the offence couldn't have happened as alleged, or the offence definitely did happen as alleged, that becomes really important in the case. So if, for example, you have text messages between the individuals, which really assists either the suspect or the complainant, well, that's going to make it much easier to make a decision as to whether to prosecute or not. So we have had cases where, you know, a suspect has apologized for what they've done to a victim, and, you know, that's a very strong piece of independent evidence. Or, I mean, we've had terrible cases where you actually have the crime caught on the video or on social media or on Snapchat, which again will make that case much, much stronger because you've got something independent to show that it did happen as alleged. We also have a more victim focus within the system, and that's there's more victim focus within society, and the system reflects that. So there's been training of lawyers, there's been training of judges, and the societal attitudes, the changing attitudes in that context will also result in a scenario where, in my experience, and this is only my own experience, that juries are now more likely to convict in sexual cases than they were 10 years ago because of all of those changes. And if a jury is now more likely to convict, well, then that changes the test also for the DPP in terms of, is there a reasonable prospect of conviction? So you may well have had an identical set of facts 10 years ago where the DPP officer was of the view there isn't a reasonable prospect of conviction in this case. But fast forward to 2025, there now is, as a result of societal changes, differing processes within the courts and differing attitudes in terms of jurors.
So that was Senior Counsel Lorcan Staines. Technology and social media playing a big part in sexual offence cases these days, Jessica.
That's right, Pat. And Lorcan also pointed to other factors such as more legislation in this area. And we know that there has been new offences created in recent years, such as the offence of strangulation and coercive control. And there's also been new laws around hate crimes created. And he also mentioned things like improved Garda processing and better techniques in terms of interviewing suspects and witnesses, particularly with relation to children. So they are some of the reasons more cases are being prosecuted. But as we can see from the data today, it's still not a significant amount compared to the overall number of sexual offence files that are prepared by the Gardaí.
And what did the DPP have to say to you?
So we asked the DPP to comment on these figures, and we asked them about the strength of a sexual offence case that is needed to be prosecuted. And the DPP's office pointed us in the direction of prosecution guidelines, which says that evidence is examined based on what is admissible. So that essentially means what is allowed to be said or shown in court. It's also assessed based on reliability and also how much evidence is actually there. And the statement also says that the Director of Public Prosecutions has to consider if there is a reasonable prospect of conviction. It said the evidence needs to be strong enough so that a jury could decide beyond a reasonable doubt that the suspect is guilty of the offence they are charged with. And the DPP's office do acknowledge in the statement, Pat, that this is a very high standard to achieve. So I asked Lorcan about the need for proof beyond reasonable doubt, and he said if a conviction is not likely, it's actually the DPP's responsibility to not proceed with prosecution.
The criminal trial involving a sexual offence, it's really a unique sort of atmosphere. You go into a courtroom that's actually quite empty because there are restrictions in place not allowing the public to enter. So you effectively have your jury and you have your registrar, you have the judge, you have the lawyers, you have some journalists, you have the accused person, and then you have the victim who will come in, not necessarily for the whole trial. He or she's welcome to come for the whole trial, but they tend to try and reduce their access to the courts as much as possible. Or they may become by way of video link again, so as not to re-traumatise themselves by having to come into that process. But it tends to be very hushed. It's tense, extremely tense. The consequences are enormous. Either which way, the accused person is found guilty, they're going to jail for a long period of time and they're branded a sex offender for the rest of their life. If the accused is found not guilty, it can be extremely traumatic for the victim, who in his or her view has been the victim of crime, and they can feel like they're not believed if a conviction doesn't follow. So there's huge consequences on both sides. There's often families on both sides. Oftentimes the families aren't allowed in. Maybe just one member is allowed from each family. They can be outside the court. There can be tension. It can be very, very stressful. It's a very traumatic process, both for the accused person and for the a victim in the case. It's traumatic for everybody, including the lawyers, including the jury. I've often seen juries in tears in the course of the case and at the end of a case in particular. While we do everything within the system to make the process as least traumatic as possible, it still is traumatic. You're still coming into court into an unusual scenario, having to talk about very intimate details, having to be asked questions about it, having suggestions made that you're not telling the truth, having 12 random people that you never met before making a determination about something personal in your life. And if at the end of the day that comes back as not guilty, well, that doesn't mean you weren't believed, because the test is so high, and it's actually for, has the prosecution satisfied the jury beyond a reasonable doubt? So a not guilty does not mean the complainant is not believed. Oftentimes a complainant will take the verdict of not guilty as being "I was not believed," which is a re-traumatizing aspect. And therefore, one must be very careful that if a case has no reasonable prospect of success, that the appropriate thing to do is not to prosecute the case.
And that was Senior Counsel Lorcan Staines again. What more, Jessica, can you tell us about the cases the DPP decided not to prosecute?
So under this Freedom of Information request, Newstalk actually received the reasons why the cases weren't prosecuted by the DPP. And the figures show us that the overwhelming reason behind a no prosecution decision was insufficient evidence, accounting for 78% of cases that weren't prosecuted. Over 1,500 people actually withdrew their complaint over the 10-year period, which accounts for around 12% of suspects that weren't prosecuted. And we heard Ciara Mangan mention this was something she even considered at one point because she found the criminal justice process so gruelling. And over that 10-year period, Pat, the data also shows us that 149 suspects actually died. So the DPP were unable to pursue that case.
Now, is it a rising phenomenon, given that we've seen more people speaking about historical abuse that happened a long time ago, therefore they're now elderly and likely to pass on?
I imagine that is playing a part, Pat, although we can't say for certain without knowing, I suppose, who the suspects were. But what we do know is that between 2014 and 2018, 56 suspects died. And in the following four-year period, this jumped quite significantly, with the DPP listing suspect death as the reason for non-prosecution for 93 cases between 2018 and 2024. And this is a very unique aspect to any case, but particularly a sexual offence case. So I spoke to Cliona Sadlier, Executive Director of Rape Crisis Ireland, about this and what all of this data means for survivors.
That sense of powerlessness is really can be quite profound around it. And the injustice, you know, when there's nothing you can do about that, but it's a hard fact, if you like, that cannot be negotiated with in any way, in terms of, you know, the justice system just simply stops at that point, because the justice system is interested in the conviction of a perpetrator. If the perpetrator has died, that's it. I think one of the things for us, and what won't show up in this data, what does it feel like to be a survivor when you're one of those cases? And what does that mean for you, and where your case stops and doesn't go any further or drops off? What a survivor might be looking for in terms of the criminal justice system is that vindication. Is the I have a third party, an authoritative third party, the state, who says they believe me, and a jury has said they believe me. But actually, only so few get through to that point. So if the opposite of it, not getting through, it doesn't mean you weren't believed. That's about the criteria in the criminal justice system. The survivor's journey is a separate process, and the community, I think, and how the community wraps around a survivor and responds to and supports a survivor is separate to that and is different to that. The criminal justice system is one particular part of the state and community's response to sexual violence, and only one part.
That was Cliona Sadlier finishing up that report from Jessica Woodlock. Now, if you've been affected by anything in that segment, you can contact the Rape Crisis Network's 24/7 helpline at 1-800-77-8888.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.